welcome to the Research and Administration Nonprofits and Research Institute session. I'm Lane Coffey, and I'm a graduate student in the Department of Biological Sciences. In this session, we're joined by three speakers who will present unique perspectives on progressing research in areas of cancer and heart disease, both through nonprofit organizations and laboratory research. I would ask you to please hold your questions until the very end, and we'll have a 15-minute question and answer session. Our first speaker is Dr. Young Lee. Dr. Lee received her PhD in biological sciences from Stanford. Following graduate school, she worked as a bioinformatics consultant at Celera Applied Biosystems, contributing to the Human Genome Project. She completed her postdoctoral training in neuroscience at the University of California, San Francisco, and at the Rockefeller University. Dr. Lee is currently the scientific director of the Damon Runyon Cancer Research Foundation, a nonprofit organization that identifies the most brilliant and promising early career scientists and provides them with funding opportunities to pursue innovative cancer research. Dr. Lee's responsibilities include overseeing the foundation's three grant programs with an annual estimated budget of $10 million and serving as the primary liaison between current and former award recipients, the foundation, and its private and corporate sponsors. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Lee to Vanderbilt.
Thank you, Lane. So I'd like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to speak here. I think it's terrific that you have this career symposium that can expose you to many different areas of ways that you can apply your science. When I was a graduate student and a postdoc, I can tell you that I did not feel like I had that sort of exposure, and so that made it a little bit more difficult to figure out how to make the transition away from the bench. So I'm going to start and work my way backwards. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I do at the foundation. I'll tell you a little bit about the foundation initially. Some of you may know about Damon Runyon because you might have applied to us for research grants. The Damon Runyon Foundation is a public charity as opposed to a private foundation, which means that we fundraise for money every single year. We have an endowment that pays for our administrative costs, but basically we raise money to fund programs and fund awards every single year. So our mission, as Lane said, is to accelerate breakthroughs by funding today's best young scientists and providing them with funding to pursue innovative cancer research. So we fund people which button am I supposed to press? Because I keep doing this wrong. Is it this? Ah, got it. So the foundation was created in 1946, and it's invested over $230 million in over 3,300 scientists. So we have three different award programs with about a $10 million annual budget. So there's a fellowship award that supports postdoctoral scientists that are conducting both basic and translational cancer research. We have a clinical investigator award that supports early career physician scientists conducting patient-oriented research. And an innovation award that supports the next generation of creative thinkers with high-risk, high-reward ideas. So these are people who are in the first few years of their faculty position and may not have enough preliminary data to get traditional NIH funding like an R01. So currently we fund 120 scientists. And at the foundation, we have a staff of about 15. And within the award programs group, there are four of us, two at the director level and two assistants. And I report directly to our executive director. I'm the only scientist on staff, which is a bit different depending on what kind of nonprofit you go to. We have a board of directors that's comprised of 28 members made up of people from all areas of business as well as from nonprofits, and then we have a scientific committee within that 28-member group that is comprised of 11 members, and they focus on all different areas of science. Our external scientific committees, there's three of them, one for each award program, and I work very closely with each of them on selecting awardees for each of our programs. So I wanted to give you an idea of what my role is at the foundation. So first of all, I oversee the foundation's grant program. So I work with the scientific committee and the board of directors and our selection committees. I attend all the selection meetings. I attend the meetings of the board of directors, which are a bit more strategic and are focused more on the vision for the foundation as a whole. I oversee the application and review processes for all of our awards. I read and approve all the progress reports from our awardees. I perform evaluations of the programs to make sure that we are continually addressing the needs of the scientists. So where are there gaps in funding? What are the needs of scientists that are not being met by other sources of funding, like the NIH, for example? And we do evaluations regularly of our programs to make sure that we are meeting the needs of the scientists. And then also I'm involved in strategic planning, program development, and implementation of those new programs for the foundation. So I also stay very much connected with what's happening in cancer research because I'm constantly reading the literature, which is great because it means that I still feel very much connected with what's happening in the lab. And so I basically read all the papers that are coming out from our scientists, both current and former awardees, and address what their impact is on cancer. And so that includes writing up brief summaries. And that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, of moving from away from the bench into a role such as this, because you need to be able to very concisely state why a research finding is important. So basically in like one sentence or maybe two, in language that can be understood not by a non-scientist. And so that can be somewhat tricky because you're used to writing in a very technical format and you feel like you're dumbing it down, but that's really a very important role. So I write all the scientific copy for the foundation's annual report, our newsletters, our website, and any other communications that go out to our donors. And then in addition, I plan and coordinate our postdoctoral retreat and other scientific symposia. So those are kind of the more scientific aspects of my position. And then I also, again, I play a role as a translator in trying to communicate the trends and the findings in basic and clinical cancer research back to our board and staff, who are primarily non-scientists. But I try to also, stay in tune with what's happening by also going to meetings like AACR and ASCO. And then I contribute to the research funding policy by being in we have a pretty large community of other grant-making organizations that we work with, and it's really about sharing best practices, but we go to meetings that are attended by Howard Hughes and Burroughs Wellcome and a lot of the other cancer foundations like the American Cancer Society, but also American Heart Association, and these are all a lot of the large nonprofit medical research funders. So in my role, I've become part of that greater community also. And then my other role is to participate in fundraising activities because we are a private charity, and so that means, going to fundraising events and working a lot with trying to communicate to donors the importance of supporting medical research. And then the other thing that we do is we've developed a lot of partnerships with industry and also with smaller family foundations, for example, where they will support our programs. And so I work with the fundraising staff to develop those proposals. And then if there are companies that have decided or foundations that have decided to fund our programs, then I work directly with them as a liaison to make sure that they feel that they're involved in the science that they're supporting. So for example, we have partnerships with Eli Lilly, Pfizer, Genentech, Novartis, and Siemens, and Amgen, and those are some of our corporate sponsors. And then the other role that I play is to help donors learn more about research, but also they call us with requests for medical referrals and information about clinical trials. And so since I am the only scientist on staff, that falls under my responsibility. And so it's been actually a great opportunity, even though I don't have a clinical background, it's been a great opportunity to learn more about what's actually happening at that level. So despite the fact that I'm trained as a basic scientist, it presents a great opportunity for me to learn more about what happens when these discoveries actually make it to patients. So in my current role, there's a lot of different skills that are carried over, that have been carried over from my time at the bench. So the ability to multitask, to manage complex projects, and to know how to prioritize when there's many different things happening at once. You know, how do you choose what you're going to focus on? I'm accustomed, because of being at the bench, to a high level of planning and organization. And as a scientist, like you, you know, if you're at the bench, you have a very good understanding of basic understanding. I mean, of basic science and how it applies to understanding disease. And in addition, it's really important to have excellent communication skills so that you can interact with both scientists and non-scientists, both written and orally. So, Lane went over my career path a little bit, but I just wanted to briefly mention, so I got my PhD at Stanford. I went on to do a brief stint in product marketing at a startup company, and this was basically just because it was an opportunity that fell into my lap. It was a company that was started up by some other people I knew at Stanford, and so I figured, you know, it was worthwhile to just go ahead, test it out, and take the opportunity to do that, even though I was planning to go back to my postdoc. So again, that was just one thing that gave me some experience outside of the lab so that I could think about whether that was something I wanted to do long term. I also worked as a consultant at Celera, annotating the human genome, in between my PhD and my postdoc. So then, as I always intended to, I went back to the bench because I really loved science and I thought I was good at research, and I really was very much committed to a career in academia at that time. So I went back and I did a relatively long postdoc, and during that time did a lot of soul searching, I think, and came to the realization that being at the bench was not necessarily what I wanted to do. And so I then went on to become the scientific director at Damon Runyon in 2008. So you guys are here because you're thinking about potentially leaving academia, I assume. And so the hardest part, I think, is really just coming to the realization and coming to terms with the fact that maybe you're not happy at the bench and maybe your skills could be applied elsewhere. And, you know, give yourself time. And it's something that, you know, I really think is the most difficult step in the whole process. So then the next step is that, you know, even though it's kind of verboten, you know, to tell your PI that guess what, you know, you're not going to stay in academia, if possible, I think it's really important to tell them that you're thinking about other opportunities and talk to your other mentors, because in my experience, it turned out that I was terrified when I went to my PI, my postdoctoral PI, to tell her that I was thinking about leaving the bench. And she was really understanding and really terrific. And then when I went to other mentors of mine at Rockefeller, they actually were really helpful. They were all very supportive. And when I told them about what areas I was thinking of going into, they actually had suggestions for people that I could speak with, other people who were trained as, you know, in academia and left the bench for whatever reason. And they actually ended up being, you know, very helpful contacts for me to have. And something that I did is also, you know, if you want to continue in a science-related field, create a list of the pros and cons of academic research. So maybe it's that you like the freedom of it. Maybe you you're tired of being narrowly focused on one specific area, but you love science and you still want to be very much involved in it. So those are the kinds of things that I think are really important to think about. And so the rest of my talk is going to be things that you've probably heard from many of the other speakers that you've heard today, but I'm going to go through it anyway in the hopes that maybe you get something more out of it. So being at symposia like these obviously is, you know, a great way to learn about other opportunities that might be out there. And I cannot overemphasize the fact that you just need to network, 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 network. And sometimes it's painful. You go to these events, you know, and you have to talk to people that are complete strangers. But, you know, it's really, really important because you never know who you're going to meet. So if you go to a networking event, you meet one person that might actually be helpful to you, it's totally worthwhile. So make sure you get the contact information from any of the people that you meet at these events and always follow up. So either by phone call or by email, you know, just send them a note saying it was great to talk to you. I'm so glad I had, you know, a chance to meet with you. And if it's something that you might potentially be interested in, then ask for an informational interview by phone or in person, and you'd be amazed by how many people are willing to share their experiences with you. So I had people offer to, you know, not only meet with me in person, but to let me shadow them for a day and see what their job was like. And those kind of experiences are really, really critical as far as figuring out what you want to do next. And then the other thing that's, I think, important to do is to, as you go through the process, try to define what the characteristics are of your ideal job. What is it that you want to do? And then write a great resume. Have many people look at your resume and help basically tailor it, you know, depending on what type of job you're looking for. A CV isn't going to cut it. So you need to have a resume that really emphasizes your skills and what you can bring to the table for various careers. So some different criteria that I think are important to consider are what your preferred work environment is. Do you want to work in a place that is that has a large staff, or would you rather be part of a small team, for example? Are you comfortable with being the only scientist on staff, or would you rather be in a place where there are multiple scientists who are going to be working with you? Do you want to have management responsibilities? Even things as simple as a dress code, like are you comfortable with having to wear a suit every day, or would you rather be in an environment that's casual and allows you to, you know, be in jeans every day like you were in the lab? So another thing that's really important, I think, is when you're moving, especially for the first position, when you're leaving academia, whether you're willing to go to a newly created position or whether you'd rather go to something that's already established, where there's a clear reporting structure, where there's clear mentorship, where there's already infrastructure, or do you want to create something that's entirely new? And then different types of job responsibilities. What would you like to do? Some jobs in nonprofit are going to have a lot of writing. Are you comfortable with fundraising, administrative duties? Do you want to interface with scientists primarily? Or are you also interested in interfacing with non-scientists? Along these lines, one of the most important pieces of advice that I got as I was looking at other careers was that someone told me, you know, think about how you want to be perceived in your next position. Is it important to you that you are still perceived as a scientist? Or is it okay with you if you're perceived, you know, at a nonprofit, for example, or in a grants management kind of role as more of an administrator? So again, just something to consider. Work hours, do you want to work 80 hours a week? Do you want to work 40 hours? Travel requirements, some positions will require a great deal of travel, others less. And what are your salary expectations? Some great resources, I think, is this book, if you haven't heard about it already, by Peter Fiske, which is called Put Your Science to Work, the Take Charge Guide, Career Guide for Scientists. And then there's a lot of great articles on the Science Careers website. If you go to your institution's career development office, there's often a lot of information there once you've narrowed it down, especially to what type of career you want to pursue. There's groups on LinkedIn that you can join, and those also provide some good advice. And again, just take advantage of all the personal contacts you have and do more and more networking. Why to choose a career in the nonprofit sector? For me, it really allows me to use my scientific background in a way that has a broader impact. So depending on what type of nonprofit you're at, it's likely to have disease relevance. You may have an impact on funding policy. These are career issues for scientists that are often being addressed. And it's really a role that also is very important for increasing communication and awareness of the importance of research to the community as a whole. And it's an opportunity to remain connected to the scientific community, but in a different capacity. And so if you're looking for nonprofit jobs, I just wanted to mention that some of the different types of job titles for scientists may be scientific director, a program officer, grants manager, a project manager, a coordinator. And the difficulty with it is that, you know, depending on the organization, there's probably going to be a different title for these kind of roles. So these are the kinds of titles that you want to keep your eye out for. And I just provided a list of some of the websites that you might want to take a look at. So Science Careers, the Chronicle of Philanthropy, Foundation Center, and the specific foundation's websites. And GuideStar is a website that actually has information about nonprofits, and you can actually look at the forms that they submit to the IRS. It's a 990 that gives basically a financial overview of the foundation so that you can see what their assets are, how much they're paying. It's usually the five most highly paid employees. Their salaries are listed there, and it just gives you a really good basis for understanding the health of the organization that you're considering. So I'm going to end there, and I'm happy to take any questions after other speakers. Thanks for your attention.